Arcipelago. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and we do have one update. Jason Woolley is on assignment, which means the best segment of the Homer Hour all week, Jason Woolley and Brian Bulaga, not necessarily in that order, will not be available, which means that you must call in because, as been stated, he can state it again if he wants, Brian Bulaga likes talking to me, but he prefers callers even more. 1-800-990-3776, the Carbless Talk and Text Line lists is more. Brian Bulaga, a man of high integrity, that is accurate, correct? You love getting calls.
Yeah, I like hearing from the people.
Yeah.
I like hearing from the people. Fun. I think it's fun. I think it's good to hear what's on people's minds. Could be Packers, could not be. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I have never heard it put exactly like that. That seems more like a political thing where you knock on doors and say, like,
well, no.
But this works too. From the people.
I don't think we need to go down the political realm.
Yeah, you should be a politician. You'd be good.
Oh, man.
Knock on the door. I'll be Brian Bulaga. My name is Brian Bulaga. I'll do whatever I can for you. Oh, another thing. I won't lie, and there's no need for us to talk. I'm going next door.
I mean, that would be close to how I would approach it. Yes. Right. That would be close.
Don't go by anything I say. Go by what I do. Don't even waste time wanting to talk to me. Just observe what I do. If what I do makes your life better, vote on me again. 26 years as a state representative, Brian Bulaga has stated 102 words in 26 years. Just look at what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that would be the way I would go about it because, I mean, all these politicians, all they do is talk and then they just lie. And
get rich.
And get disappointed by what they tell you. So, because they tell you something different.
They say whatever they have to win. You, of course, would not. You would say whatever you have to make things better, whatever you decide is necessary to make things better. I'll vote for you now, even though you're not running.
I don't get how you people live that life, but it's, and we're almost back in full swing of it here pretty soon. My phone keeps getting text messages. It's annoying. Yours has to get it because you give out your phone number. So
414-308-4785. No, because I do that, they think I'm not stable. I think they're afraid to
I would have figured every pack in America would be hitting you up.
Get all these things from, we've noticed on your Medicare, actually Medicaid state, and that you could get a goal. And when I hang up, I block them. And then I get new calls from other numbers. Yeah. I bet I've blocked 25 different calls all regarding the ability for me to get more money or do something for Medicaid. But back to the important topic, which is, first of all, good evening, Brian. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. All right. Now, because there's no Jason Woolley, we got to get – now, people can go and also chat on YouTube. YouTube is so big now that we have to give that credibility. But, no, I want 1-800-990-3776. This is your chance for the next – 50 minutes or so, any questions you have of Brian Bulaga. And if you don't, you know what the alternative is. I got all kinds of questions. By the way, whenever or wherever you're listening, just know we're live on YouTube as well. You can watch the show, see what's happening in the studio, comment along with us. Just search ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube and subscribe today. Now, I think the Brewers are back in action tomorrow, Friday. Which is important because then we have is the dome open or the dome closed, and I still have not found my backpack, so both of my King's Head hairpieces are gone. No one has called to say we have them. I'd pay at least $5 to have the two of them back. So I purchased mine at Amazon. I think you saw it, didn't you? I don't know where.
I did.
But you didn't see it in in full form. Yes, because I'm not doing that ahead of time because it's not the whole point of this. We have a sponsor, too, in honor of Dome Open or Dome Close. So unless you have questions, 1-800-990-3776. I have one that regards soccer because on Twitter they've been showing the play that was one of the great passes that Messi made from, I don't know, what do you call it, the right wing or the right baseline somewhere?
Yeah, the right wing. Yeah.
There are two guys there. Two. And there's number 25. Okay, I got two guys on Messi. I know nothing about soccer. You know what? One guy's going to be on his right, and another guy's going to be on his left. The guy in front was on his left so that Messi could go right, and the second guy was further back, number 25, and did nothing to prevent Messi from going right and making the play he wanted. He's literally standing behind the defensive player in front of him. Again, I don't know this because I thought of it in basketball the same way. I'm having two guys on Messi all the time, or at least when he gets in that situation. So there's no direct. If he's going to make a pass, he's going to have to do it amazingly between us because we're stopping him from going right and we're stopping him from going left. And if he goes in the middle, we're right there, the two of us. They stood. I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter. What this great pass, and it was a great pass. What in God's name is 25 doing? So you tell me you know soccer.
Well, I think the biggest concern is when you face up Messi is how lethal he is on his left. And he can beat a guy super easy on his left. And when he gets on his left, he likes to get to the front of the goal. Not obviously outside the box, but towards the center of the goal. And he curls in shots with his left foot because his left foot.
Okay, so that guy plays him so far left, he's left of him because I got a second guy behind me that can cover the area. It's not just me. I got two.
I remember the play vividly. I was watching it as it was going on, and I didn't understand how, because for some reason there's this thought that Messi can't use his right foot. Obviously, he can use his right foot, and he's very good at it, as we saw. I just don't know how you let Messi pick up the ball in that area, period, without, like you said, double teaming him at that point in the game. No one wanted to get beat on their left, his left, to give up the highlight goal where he curves it in from outside the post and wins the game. So they wanted to force him right. They did force him right, and then he whips in a cross between two defenders, and it's a header. And that's that. Okay. All right. Right? Like, and listen,
if I'm one guy and I'm there alone, I would have done exactly what he did.
Correct. I would have made him go right.
When
there's
I'm
no
the
doubt.
Second guy, I got a lot of options. One is to prevent it from going right. Then his choices are he can't go left. That guy's so far left. He's left, as I like to say, a Bernie Sanders. He's left of Bernie Sanders. You can't go left. He's not in front of him. He's to the left of him. Because the guy behind him, he knows if he has to, he only has to move a step. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, believe me. I completely...
So I need to have a soccer person say, do they double team a great player? There are certain times, obviously you can't do it because it opens things up. But when you're that close, when the person is that close to the goal... Seems like similar to what they said with Jordan. Doesn't mean you can stop. You make him go left. I watched the thing about the Pistons. He's going to go left. And when he goes to the basket, we're going to beat the crap out of him. Not necessarily in that order. So anyway,
I agree with you. It seemed like the other defender, I don't know why he wouldn't have been more attentive to stopping him going to the right as well when you know you have your buddy there.
Right, and I respect the fact that I think he was doing, to some degree, what they had planned to do, and I think you nailed it perfectly. All right, we can't stop him. What's the one thing we can't let him do? We can't let him go left. All right, so our one guy's there. My job is to be next to him.
It's not if he gets beat. It's when he gets beat.
Right, he's not going to get beat left because this guy's he's left of.
Yeah.
Right. He could go straight ahead, because there's an opening there, but that's the one that I cover. Then I'm smart enough to know that whatever he was doing was probably in line with All right, what are we going to give up? As you alluded to, we're going to give up him going right. And you can also wonder how the hell that guy got free to enter it when...
Oh, how it got in between the two guys. Yes. It was like dropped perfectly.
It's like they mistimed the jump, the guy in front.
And the ball was just dropped in between two guys like perfectly. Like it was just...
But if the guy in front jumps at the proper time, he blocks it.
Yeah, most likely. Okay. Yes.
So.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything else? Just so you know, the World Cup final is on Sunday. It's not USA against not USA. And the winner will be not USA.
Correct. Very correct.
Yeah. If you know, I have resolved my, I'm working on the proper person maybe tomorrow to have on to start my, the new standard for U.S. soccer. The group put together will be told you either make the quarterfinals in 4 years or all of you will be fired. And then I just have to have the person to, the best person available to make the team as good as possible. This is no longer acceptable and no one cares what I think, and I don't even like soccer, but someone else has to take the same approach.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what they brought Pochettino in for, was to get to that game, and he didn't get to that game.
Yeah, like, and my new people probably would fire him first. Everybody needs to know.
Yeah, I mean, that needs to start being the standard.
And maybe the team wasn't good enough. Someone else, you'll have to judge on that. If the team's good, but not good enough. But everyone needs to know, not getting to the quarterfinals, barring something really weird, then you're getting fired because that's no longer acceptable. We are the United States of America. We have lots of people. I just want to let you know, I would feel the same way in China.
Yeah, they're banned from playing soccer. And FIFA banned them.
Right, but I'm saying that doesn't mean we're going to be banned forever. We're playing so that one day when we play, because we have a gazillion people, that we're not accepting the quarter, worse than the quarterfinals ever. I want it to be a bad year is when you lose in the quarterfinals. So if you have any suggestions as to who to start with, to start, the first thing I want to do is somebody important set the standard that I've set. Because I don't count, and I recognize that. But you agree with the standard. It's not acceptable.
I agree. Yeah. I agree that it's not acceptable. I mean, because it's not acceptable because we've been told it's getting better every year, and it hasn't. So you can only get told that something's good or getting better for so long before you look at it and go, no, it's not.
And some effort has been made. It's not like... We just don't care. It's cricket. Okay. I don't think there are a whole lot, it's not cricket. We've made it clear that to some degree we care, but.
A lot of investment made.
Yes. Yeah. We don't, as I say, we either don't care enough or just bad. And the reason doesn't matter. It just has to change. Yeah. Do you have any person you think I should contact to be the first person to tell me what to do next and just to get somebody of importance? Who would you like to hear say? We need to have someone new running it. And, if you don't make the quarterfinals, you and all of your group will get fired in 4 years.
You should get the guys that talk on TV that didn't want to say anything, like the Landon Donovan, like he's on TV calling these games. Like he's a huge voice.
Okay.
In Landon U.S. soccer.
Right. Like that. You think they would listen to him? He was the guy who was on the team the last time they made the quarterfinals.
Right? Yes.
2002. All right. Landon Donovan is your guess. All right.
Yeah, like Landon Donovan.
It's all about important people, whoever they are, have to be impressed enough to say, yeah, this is right. Let's go.
I mean, those guys even have to think, that got to the quarterfinal, like losing before you get there, what is this accomplishing? Like you won your group. Okay, great. Like that's good. Like, congratulations.
We're not Venezuela. We're not Belgium. I mean, I would say Belgium but the Europeans have to pick another. It's Peru. I would have
preferred to have been Belgium.
Yeah, I'm saying they're actually better. So, all right, we have the foundations. You don't think I'm crazy to make this declaration. And I want to emphasize, I don't even like soccer that much, but it doesn't matter.
No,
I don't like
but that needs to be the pressure on the coach and the players.
Yeah.
That needs to be the pressure. Yeah.
And maybe I have to start the T-shirt. To win the World Cup would be the greatest achievement in the history of United States sports.
I mean, if you look at how far off we are, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be.
And I don't know that, even if you don't like soccer, okay, it doesn't matter. Even if you've never watched soccer and never going to soccer, that doesn't change the standard that should exist given where it exists in international competition. I don't know, would a win be bigger than when the U.S. beat Russia? That's not a question of which is more important. That's a question of if I won Wimbledon, that wouldn't make it more important, but it would be more amazing. And to have beaten a Russian team that hadn't lost internationally in 10 years with college kids, it might still go as the biggest surprise. Someone else can judge that. But there's no way, it's not even close to being as significant as winning the World Cup.
Correct.
Not everybody plays hockey in the zone.
Yeah, not every country is a hockey country.
Yes.
Almost every country is a soccer country.
Now, because I don't want you to think that you should agree with me too often, I do want to make it aware that if I was the president of the Green Bay Packers, and this is why I asked the question, if LaFleur does not win a playoff game this year, he's fired. Now, I'm a huge fan of winning the division, but if you win the division and then you lose the first playoff game, what the hell's the point? Point of winning the division is that you have an easier first round. So, assessing what he's done and did early, I understand completely that if Brian Bulaga were the president of the Green Bay Packers, he would not have the same position. But, and I don't think the current president has that position, or he never would have given him the extension that he did. I think he has to be given somewhat of a pass, whatever that is, we don't know, to get more than 1 year. I mean, given what they did, Matt LaFleur is going to be the coach of the Green Bay Packers for at least 2 years. Now, given both of those, and we do have a caller, so I'll shut up in a second, but President Brian Bulaga, take over.
Yeah, he. I mean, to me, he does not get fired if he does not win a playoff game this year. To me, that's not it. That would have been like firing Mike. I get we had won a Super Bowl. That'd be like firing Mike after we lost to the Giants in 2011. Right?
I can answer that if I was president. No. We won a Super Bowl.
I get it.
The year before.
But then what about in 2014 when we lost to Seattle in the NFC Championship? Or then in 2016 when we lost in the NFC Championship to Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
Because the standard at that point in time with Aaron was Super Bowl. Am I correct on that?
You are correct, and I want to recognize that I have my weakness as a president, too. You know what my weakness is? You win a championship, it's almost like forever.
It's yeah.
And they want to say, if you ever wanted a president in the NFL, you would want Homer if you won a championship because of how much cushion he gives you. I think I would say that you win a championship, you get 10 years.
Okay.
That's what I would say as president.
Okay.
And then you can fire me as president if you want, but that's about how I look at it. That's good for 10 years.
All right. All right. I respect that. I respect that.
Yeah,
and
you would never look at it that way. That's fine. You wouldn't.
Then, well, and neither did Mark Murphy. Because
correct.
In 2018, Mike was done. So that's, you know. That's
he got to his point almost exactly like I did would, but quicker. Because his made no sense in the sense of the way it was done.
Correct. Yes. I don't think anyone really understood the way it was done.
I mean, the mistake made was in regards to Ted Thompson because of his health. And Murphy will always be responsible for that, for not addressing that as soon as it should have. And I admit this could be incredibly reckless because I'm not a doctor, but I think those around believe it was evident that there needed to be a change sooner than one was done. But
well, regardless of that, right? I mean, I looked at it as fire him with four games left.
Yeah,
like that was a little. I don't know. That was a little much.
You're too. See, you're nice as me as the guy who says you win. That ain't ever happening. Guy who wants a Super Bowl, he's finishing out. I don't care if he's 0-17, 0-16. He ain't being fired till the year's over. He has earned that as a result of the ring that everybody wears. But
yeah, that's the way I think a lot of guys felt, was at least let him finish out the season, right? And at least that's the way I saw it. And you know, but no, if I'm the president, Matt doesn't win a playoff game this year. No, he's not getting fired this year.
All right.
No.
Can't say I'm surprised. You're much more reasonable than I am. And I think that's what, and this is how I would take it. You tell me if you were LaFleur. That's how I would take it as LaFleur. I only know one thing for sure. I'm not coaching for my job this season. Not.
Nope.
He doesn't do what he did the way he did it. And maybe that's one of the reasons he did it, to make sure that LaFleur, and I would say Goody the same way. You don't give somebody that kind of an extension and have them think, even in the smallest bit, that my job is on the line.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, I know you want to always say, like, oh, I'm coaching for my job, but not in this situation. Not in this situation, or got players that just sign a new extension, say, hey, I'm playing for my job every year. Like, no, you're not. You just signed an extension.
Right. All the players know if you are or aren't, based on the money, how much, and when.
Yes.
It's pretty easy for players to figure out. All right.
Yes.
1-800-990-3776. Jason Woolley is on assignment. So it is Brian Bulaga and you, unless you is not there. And then it's me next. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. Unfortunately, Jason Wilde is on assignment, so no segment that's so good. Best segment of the week. So 1-800-990-3776, the Carpenter's Talk and Text Line lists more. Otherwise, more of my questions, and I have more. Fisco Auto Body, it's a family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are. And yes, they still own it, so they're still working on your cars. That's one of the reasons they're so good. On Forest Home in Franklin, Fisco Auto Body. On Forest Home in Franklin, expert workmanship guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Why? Because they're still working on the cars. They've owned the business. Imagine how many years they're working on cars before they even work on yours. One of the reasons they're so good. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. You'll like them, and then eventually you'll like me, and that's a small but nice part of it, too. Fisco, Fisco, Fisco. So you remember the name. 1-800-990-3776. AC in Tulsa. You're on with Brian Bulaga on anything you want to talk about, because you're, in a way, filling in for Jason Wilde.
Wow, what an honor. First-time caller.
Long-time listener. Love the show. Go ahead.
Yep. Good afternoon on this smoky Thursday, Mr. Blaga and Mr. Homer. Wanted your guys' opinion on the recent Brewers trade. I was hoping that they didn't give up more than the Applebee's gift card for the two pitchers they got back, because they're injury-prone, average pitchers at best. But I wanted your guys' thoughts. They gave up Prince Fielder's son, who's in single-A ball.
It's a gamble. They know they need better pitching to go well in the playoffs, and I am me. I don't know if Brian's ever been a sheep. Whatever the Brewers do, I agree. But doesn't mean I don't know exactly what's going on. This is not a this is changing things. We believe there's something there, given what we are giving in terms of Fielder's kid, grandkid. But it's not huge. I believe John Anderson said this about the players that the Bucks got for Giannis. They're parts. These are parts. No more, but parts can help. And now to Brian Bulaga. Are you a sheep for anything? Do you have anything where you say, I just agree, not based because I'm scared, but because I actually have that much confidence? I'm sure you were a sheep for Aaron Rodgers. I'll bet that.
I mean, there were certain things that he did that I scratched my head at times. But normally it panned out. So, like, I'd have to shut up and be like, all right, well, it is what it is. It worked out. He was right. I was wrong. It is what it is. From a sports perspective, I would say the club I support, Manchester City, normally seems like what anything that they do normally works out.
There we go. And what have you always been that way? What puts you over the line to say, I'm in?
I mean, winning four Premier League titles in a row, winning a treble in a season, how they play. Like, it's just, it's hard to doubt them when they make moves and they do things. Like, they're a great manager. Pep Guardiola left after 10 years. They hire a new guy, Enzo Maresca. He was on Guardiola's staff for a year or two. They hired him. People are questioning, can he do the job? I just have to assume he's going to be able to do the job. I mean, why would I think that he couldn't? Why would Man City hire a guy that couldn't do it? So that's where I would say I'm kind of a follower in that aspect, that whatever they do, I just say, yeah, that'll probably work. But I guess from the Brewers, I remember you talking about it last week. They need a pitcher. You kept saying that they need pitching. They need it. And if you think that this season can be special, even like the caller said that these guys may be injury prone, you're not really looking for 3 years down the road.
Correct.
You're not really looking at that. You're looking at, what can these guys do for me this season? And it's not even this season. It's what can they do for me in 7-game series against the other top teams in the NL? And that's what you're looking at. And to me, if that's getting rid of Fielder's kid, and if you can win an NL championship and get to a World Series, does that justify it? Probably. Now Fielder's kid may end up being amazing, and it's like, oh gosh, we really, really squandered that. But at the same time, you're taking a gamble. Like, that's a gamble, that's a risk. But you think you have something special in the clubhouse this year, and you just want to add something to it that you know you need, and that's pitching. It's like what the Rams did that one year. We're gambling on this year, and they end up winning a Super Bowl doing it, right? So. I look at it, I understand you're hedging some future players potentially, but you think you got something now. So make the move. I get these guys are injury prone and this and that. Yeah, okay. But we just need them to be healthy for the rest of this way. We don't need them healthy in 3 years. That's not our concern.
And then it's, how good is someone available? They don't have any dreams about this person, these pitchers being that important. But, they get better. And you can, if someone's available for the rest of the year, even 2 years at the most, what you have to pay with your young talent is going to be less. So, but if they don't do something, this is when you find out if you're sheep or not, because then you support even what they don't do. If they would have done it, they would have paid too much, or and the difficulty is the Dodgers are just that good. But
that too.
I don't think so. Do you? You're not going to say so publicly, or do you think that maybe you'd have a better chance next year in terms of assessing? You have some young pitching talent. They'll be a year older next year. Maybe they'll be as good. That can be an answer as well, because they're assessing all the different players that are out there. But there may be a pitcher or two, star pitcher, that would be available for the end of the season next year. And they're never going to say that. So it's hard. However, you just feel like when you believe in someone. Even when you had to believe in Rodgers, and even if he's doing something wrong, you still look at the big picture and go, I'm going to be ahead, right? I'm going to be ahead, even if I'm wrong, by just going along with pretty much everything. That fascinates me, when someone could then stand up and say, no, I'm like Homer, a sheep, but not this time. You've gone too far, or... I don't know what that would have to be, and I don't know what it necessarily was with Rodgers. Or could have been.
He never did anything that made guys be like, all right, man, like, that's that's enough. Like, that's no. Like, you're losing it here. Like, no one cared that he would change a play in the huddle or would completely check out of something, or like, you'd be mad, like, at the time being if it didn't work out, right? Like, but in the back of your brain, you'd be thinking he's looking at it for three series down the road, right? Like, if he checks out of this and he runs something, is he setting something up for later down in the series? Which a lot of the times he was, right? He would check something against a certain look that might have been really crappy for us up front that we had to handle. And it didn't work out, and we were all pissy walking off the field at him. And then three or four series later, he'd bait a team into doing something and check us into the right thing, and it would pay off and bang. Like, it's just kind of...
Can you have the confidence to do something, setting something up? This is an area in which I don't know anything and wonder how much occurs. Does that actually occur where you do something? I'm not going to say that you don't think it'll work, but you're setting something up for later in the game. What's the reality of explaining that to us?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it sounds really, like, when you explain it and I say it, it probably sounds far-fetched. Like, oh, yeah, sure you were. Like, you,
but you know. No. You but know, like, on the workouts and stuff you did during the week.
Right. But the answer is yes, that happens. You set things up throughout a game to run certain plays later in a game and against certain looks and against certain pressures and protections against certain things. So, like, when... Like, the blocking schemes are the blocking schemes, right? And that's not going to change much. I mean, he could change what direction he moves the line or who's got a big duel or not or who's squeezing and who he's cutting loose and things like that. But it's the routes he's running in behind that to manipulate them, right? Like, so he may run something in the second quarter that looks like crap. We might not have picked it up, or... He cut the wrong guy loose and he couldn't get the throw off and it looks like crap. But damn well knowing in the third quarter, they're going to show that look again and he's going to know exactly what to go back to. He'll go back to the same route or maybe a little different variation of it, but he's going to send us the other way and we're going to pick that up so he has that little split second of time to pull off the throw and it turns into something big. So, like, all these things is like, him just taking screenshots and snapshots throughout a game to set something up later that the defense thinks, for some reason, defenses thought he hadn't figured it out, which he had figured it out. It's just, it's putting it together in photographs in your memory as you get up to the line of scrimmage to just go out there and do it. So he, like, you would think, oh, that's the offensive coordinator's job. Well, the offensive coordinator isn't on the field to set it up. Like, yeah, he can call the play. He doesn't know what the defense is running. He has no idea. I mean, when we get to the line of scrimmage is when we dissect all that and figure that out. The offensive coordinator has nothing to do with it at that point. It's up to the quarterback and the guys he's directing then to figure it out. And that's how it gets set up. Yeah, you may call a play. Oh, well, we ran a deep post on this one. Now I'm going to run a skinny corner on the next one. Okay, sure. But, like, that's just X's and O's. It's what comes down to the protections and what the defense is showing you in rotations and how you're manipulating linebackers to get them to move and with the quarterback's eyes and the routes in behind it. Like, that's all the stuff that the quarterback's doing throughout a game if your quarterback is that guy.
Right? How, like, much would he, or how confident do you have to be to sacrifice? So you're running a play to set something up. Are you ever willing to run a play that you know won't go well, or do you always feel that the play will work to some degree and then it's setting up in the future? How much are you willing to sacrifice early in the game to set something up big for later?
I think in the run game, you're willing to sacrifice running into bad looks early on, looks that aren't advantageous. You're certainly not going to pass protect and call protections that are going to get your quarterback hit. No, you're not going to do that. You're always going to want to try to shore up the protection. If you guess wrong, you guess wrong, and you take a note of it. But in the run game, you're willing to run into bad looks to potentially then set up play actions. Because if you run into a bad look where you think that the defense knows they have you they have you outsmarted. They got you. If you run play action off of that and they commit to that run, the what opens up behind that in the play action game and the commitment from the defense is huge. So you're willing to bang your head against that wall for a quarter.
Wow.
To set something up later that will pay off big. There's no doubt about that. But like from a protection standpoint, you're not really going to gamble getting your quarterback freaking sandwiched.
Right. You never do that.
Yeah. You're not going to do that. Like that's not.
Does this occur in college or is this totally a pro thing?
I think college, that these quarterbacks are always trying to get into the cleanest possible look. And they do that. I mean, obviously in the pros too, like they're trying to get into clean runs too. Don't get me wrong, but there's sometimes you just have to eat it and run into something you don't want to run into and deal with it. But you know that later down the line, that may set something up for you, you know, that will be a positive. That's going to pay off in a quarter or two. So more so in college, I think these guys just want to get it right. They want to make the right check. They want to make the right flip to get out of bad looks, which is fine, right? Like that's not a big deal. But
you're never going to say after the game, yeah, we knew this stuff was, we knew we weren't going to gain any yards because we figured later on.
No.
Yeah, things that you can't say.
You would never admit that. I would never, after a game, go, yeah, I knew that first quarter run, those runs we called were going to be crap. I knew they were going to be terrible. We weren't going to get anything off them. But in the third quarter, that play action was going to pan out. I knew it was going to. You're never going to admit that. But you know as an offensive lineman, when the run gets called and the IV gets made and you don't hear an adjustment, you're looking at the box and you're seeing – the look and where the D linemen are aligned and you're like, all right, like this isn't paying off here. Like this is a bad look to run into, but you still run it. And it's just like, hey, maybe you get a couple yards and you look at it like, oh, okay, that's not terrible. Or you get a 2 yard loss.
How often, if ever, did you run into a defense in which you thought they were trying or doing the same thing to you?
I thought, like, and I've said this before because I give the guy, as the kids say these days, his flowers. Because I think I thought he was a really good coordinator. I don't know where he is now with Zimmer.
Yeah.
I think Zimmer did that a bunch. And those were always some of the most fun matchups.
Because he had to assume that they're too good. They're gonna get me for some stuff. I can't totally eliminate. I can't stop it. So here's the way I want to give it so that when I need to, I got my best chance at stopping it, correct?
100%. Yeah. And that was with his pressures and his run stopping, how he tried to stop the run. So, like, you just knew going against Zimmer, it was going to be a chess match from quarter to quarter and different looks were going to get changed. Slightly that they looked similar, but they were just off a little bit. And you're like, okay, that I thought that's what it looked like in the second quarter, but that's not what it looks like right now. But it's very similar, but you know, the safeties dropped down an extra 3 yards, or the linebackers kicked over the three tech. He was stacked over, you know, the guard. Now he's a little bit outside the three tech. That's a little bit of a tell. He wasn't there last time. So, like,
wow,
there's little pictures that he would change all the time to try to get the offense to overthink it, right? Like, and he was very good at it.
And then there are other defensive coordinators I know that we owned it. This is almost too easy.
Yeah,
you don't have to mention their names, but there had to be some of that too.
Oh yeah, there were plenty of coordinators where they were a Rolodex coordinator. They had their calls. They stuck to their calls. You knew where every guy was going to be at all times. And it was very easy to just dissect it. And you just knew he was going to be here. If I step here, he's going there. If they're running this pressure, he's going to creep up and hit it here. And then the other guy's going to loot. Like, you just knew what was going to happen.
God, that's got to be fun.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
kicking when you, their butt.
Oh, yeah. When you know it's coming and then it it pans out exactly the way you saw it, and you saw it on tape, because it's just like, oh, it's fantastic. And then a run pops off for 15 yards, or there's a 30-yard completion when they pressure. It's such a kick to their gut too, because you knew they've been practicing it all week. Like, oh man, this is gonna stop them. This is gonna be it. We're really gonna fool the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers with this. Like, this is gonna fool them. Nah,
not so. All right, we got some stats, some more stuff on Jordan Love about how good he is. We're gonna do that in a second. Founded by inventors, fueled by community, and focused on business for 130 years, Horicon Bank has been helping businesses across Wisconsin grow through commercial lending. Now, that same local approach is here to serve the greater Milwaukee business community. And again, this is about commercial lending. Financing requests approved in days, not weeks. Bankers who understand your business, products designed to support your cash flow. Because when it comes to commercial lending, Horicon Bank gets the job done. Visit Horicon Bank in New Berlin, Tulsa, Menominee Falls, Grafton, or West Bend. Horicon Bank, together, doing good for 130 years commercial lending, and now for the greater Milwaukee business community, member FDIC. Jordan Love, after struggling during his first half season as a starter in 2023, Love led the NFL in total QBR over the ensuing 2.5 seasons of football. If Jordan Love led in a stat for 2.5 seasons of football, you know what that tells me? That stat stinks, because he's not that good. We'll discuss it next. Hard to believe we're behind, even with Jason Woodley on assignment. This, I believe, was ESPN. I think it was Barnwell who did it, talking about players a team had and how much you'd have to give up, and he basically said you'd have to give up 3 first round picks for Jordan Love. And quoting Barnwell, Love continues to play better than people think, although the end result has continued to be frustrating short playoff runs. After struggling during his first half season as a starter in 2023, Love led the NFL in total QBR over the ensuing 2.5 seasons of football. He's a successful playmaker who doesn't take many sacks. And while his picks are truly egregious as a result, his interception rate over the past 3 years is better than league average. Love is a really good player and has been without a reliable top wideout. While I would agree, as I said, the first thing I notice is any stat that tells you that Jordan Love was the best quarterback in the NFL for 2.5 seasons, stat stinks. There's no such stat, and can be no such stat, because he was never the best quarterback in the NFL for 2.5 seasons. But I defer to Brian Bulaga, and also curious if there are any stats that players actually look at.
I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what stat says he was the best in for 2 years.
Led the NFL in total QBR over the ensuing 2.5 seasons of football.
I just, sometimes the QBR I'm not in line with. You know what I mean? Like,
what I'm asking. I don't know. What are you in line with? Did you ever look at stats as a player or notice anything?
From a quarterback standpoint, I always liked interception to touchdown ratio.
Yep.
I think that was always something that I, you know, for every 10 touchdowns you throw, how many picks you throw it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can be putting up tons of yards, which is great. But if you're throwing 3 or 4 picks for every 10 touchdowns, that's not great, right? So I always looked at that, and obviously maybe I'm beating a dead horse here, because the guy I played with threw like 0.1 interception per touchdown in his
– No, statistically, they've judged for a long time that's the worst thing a quarterback can do. I've always wanted it to be interception and fumbles lost. Because I think that's just as bad. Now, I understand with a QB, sometimes that can be a bad offensive line. But
yes,
a turnover is a turnover. When you walk off the field as an offense,
you're right. A turnover is a turnover.
And so somehow the fumbles are different because they're – but an interception can be unlucky tipped or the wide receiver. It's just turnovers versus touchdowns, yeah.
There's context to everything, obviously.
Right, and I think touchdowns, too, about a quarterback's ability to run for a touchdown. I want to give them some credit for that. That is
100%.
Jalen Hurts has been huge because they've done a play that didn't exist for a long time.
A tush push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a rushing touchdown by a quarterback, you can judge it. It seems to me that's pretty much the same as a passing touchdown. Dude got in the end zone. Now, it's fewer yards, but.
And it should count the same, but it doesn't for quarterbacks, unfortunately.
All right. Well, we're going to break and then see more. If Brian Bulaga, if he gives us a stat he really likes, then we're going to look at that stat first. Next. We're going to get to stats. And, of course, honoring Brian Bulaga, we will have ESPN National in progress. But the Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. Ready for this, Brian? You're going to need to do some work here. If Matt LaFleur doesn't win a playoff game, he should be fired. 78% say yes, 22% say no. I know you don't have everything in order yet, but how would you respond to people that voted yes to change their mind or at least understand why you voted no?
Well, if you're going to fire him just for not winning a playoff game again, there would have been no point to even give him a new contract. What's the point? I understand that there's high expectation and there should be. That should be the expectation in Green Bay all the time. But if you're going to just fire someone because they didn't win a playoff game right off the jump after giving him extension, why even give him?
Should have fired him last time.
Yeah, you should have just done it the last time. Then. If that's how short the leash is, what's the point? And then if you fire him for that, then that means the players weren't good enough too. So does that mean the GM?